mouth, the brave sight of the black man. We're down to the left child, we will survive. In this country wilderness, swimming through the waters of Babylon like a rebel fish. Jungleist, specialist, predator and survivalist. Spitting heaven fire from his lips, burn slave driver.
Welcome, listeners, to Time for an Awakening on Black Talk Radio Network, New Media for the New Millennia. This is a history and current events program from a cultural perspective. We find this program necessary because Hosea 4:6 states, "My people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge." But we as a people will turn this around. Proverbs 4:7 states, "Wisdom is the principal thing, therefore get wisdom. Thou thy getting, get an understanding." Again, welcome to the program this evening with your host, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. The number to reach us to get involved in the conversation this evening is 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We're streaming live audio at several locations. You can hear us at timeforanawakening.com, which is the homepage. Catch the live stream at that location. You can hear us streaming at www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. Again, that's www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening, and the live stream is playing there also. We're streaming at abitumi.com. That's abitumi.com/timeforanawakening. They stream from Ghana, or you can download the TuneIn Radio app to any of your devices. TuneIn Radio is a free radio app in that TuneIn search engine. Just type in Time for an Awakening. There you'll see the icon, and you can stream the program live, even into your car if you had a Bluetooth capabilities or the auxiliary connection. Again, that's Time for an Awakening radio program with the live stream on the TuneIn app. Drop us an email at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Again, that's timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Time for an Awakening also has a fan page on Facebook. In that Facebook search engine, you can type in Time for an Awakening radio program. There you'll always see interesting content being posted daily by myself or Brother Richard. And do me a favor before you leave that page, just hit that like button. That's Time for an Awakening radio program with the fan page on Facebook, and Time for an Awakening media is also there. Always full of the latest podcasts of the various programs on Time for an Awakening media, interesting articles that you can read, download at later times, and share with your friends. Also, check out that Time for an Awakening marketplace and our partnership with BB Toomey. Always interesting things in the marketplace all the time. Various African language classes, classes on education, economics, social systems, health, and much, much more being taught by professors on both the continent and in the diaspora. So, again, make that one of your favorites. Put that in your address bar. That's timeforanawakening.com. Timeforanawakening.com will take you straight to Time for an Awakening media. It's 6:08 on this Sunday edition of Time for an Awakening, the Sunday, April the 12th edition of Time for an Awakening. Our scheduled guest this evening in conversation, Pan-African activist, organizer, and professor emeritus of African studies at Cal State University at Northridge, Garveyite, Dr. David Horn, is scheduled to join us this evening in conversation. And you can always get involved with a question or comment by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We'll be right back to get the program started after a brief word from our sponsors.
Mr. Moderator, our distinguished guests, brothers and sisters, our friends and our enemies, everybody is here.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Not a Wu-Tang-a. All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Overworked? Suffering with an underperforming company, headache customer, staff, or vendors? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? We turned a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one transformation created for entrepreneurs like you in various industries around the country. Not where you're used to from accounting and business consulting? Well, welcome to New Business Solutions. If you're ready to go beyond advising, coaching, and training and get implemented results, call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions apply the best comprehensive administrative, accounting, operations, human resources, management, sales, and marketing to help you actualize your vision for yourself and your company. From anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072. Spelled new as in numerous on your device right now. Book your free consultation at newbusinesssolutions.com.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening. With your host, Brother Elliot. Sundays, 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m. for podcasting or live program scheduling. Hit us up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. It's 6:13 on this Sunday edition of Time for an Awakening. Before we get started with our program this evening, I want to welcome in my co-host, Philadelphia activist and tour guide at the African American Museum here in Philadelphia at 7th and Arch Street, Brother Richard. Is with us, Brother Richard.
Yes, sir, Brother Elliot.
How are you, sir?
I'm doing fine because of the the conversation we'll be having with Dr. Horn, because it gives me a chance to kind of I'm a dues paying card carrying Garveyite, right, at local 121 in Philadelphia. My dues is not updated. So, and having this conversation with Dr. Horn is kind of like getting me to get in gear to pay my dues. And I think that's important because we should be supporting, all of us should be supporting, whether we're actively engaged or not, in some type of organization. I don't know if you would agree with that. Elliot, but I think that this conversation with Dr. Horn will help us understand from a geopolitical space where we are right now.
Yeah, well, I definitely agree with you, because if you're not active doing something, and especially now, then you're doing nothing. We have to be doing something out here to positively affect change in our community and with our people, and especially with the thinking of our people in this time that we're living in. Richard, you know what? I hope I didn't, or Dr. Horn didn't get confused with the time, because I think he's in California.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
I don't know whether this, let me see. This might be him. Dr. Horn, is this you? No, that's not him. You know what? Let me do this. I'm going to take a quick break, and then I'll come back. If he's gotten confused, we'll deal with that. We'll get him on. I'm going to take give me a couple of minutes. I'm going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back. Listeners, it's Sunday edition of Time for an Awakening. It's 6:15 on this Sunday edition. We'll be right back.
With host Brother Elliot and Brother Richard on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency and business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Escape the digital plantation. IBBToMe.com, IBBToMe.TV, IBBToMeTV.com, IBBToMe.store are here for you. You are ready to be free of non-African social media. Don't run from danger, run to safety. IBBToMe.com is here for you. You are ready to be free of digital plantations to control your own products. IBBToMe.store is here for you. ABIBITUMI, Black Power, ABIBITUMI. The only word you need to know to join your global Commits You Black family, to join your interconnected Commits You Black communities. Escape the digital plantation now. IBBToMe.com, IBBToMe.TV, IBBToMeTV.com, IBBToMe.store. We are here for you. Escape the digital plantation.
A new era, a new phase of the struggle, where we have moved from a struggle for decency, which characterized our struggle for 10 or 12 years, to a struggle for genuine equality. And this is where we're getting the resistance, because there was never any intention to go this far. People were reacting to Bull Connor and to Jim Clark rather than acting in good faith for the realization of genuine equality.
Do you think white people in this country, and I'm talking about non-segregationists, people devoid of thinking they're devoid of racism. Do you have any idea of what they want the Negro to be in America?
I think the vast majority of white Americans will go but so far. It's a kind of installment plan for equality. And they are always looking for an excuse to go but so far.
And know that this problem needs to be solved, and we can't keep relegating it to generation after generation because a few of us got a little money, a few of us got positions, a few of us have wealth, while the masses of our people are going steadily down. No one man can rise above the condition of his people. The brother said responsibility. Is it that we should let them take responsibility to do for us, or should we pool the knowledge that's at the table, the power that's in our community, the wealth that's in our community to change the harsh reality of black life in America? We have to do the job of fulfilling the black agenda.
Whites are expert game players in their contests to maintain absolute power. One of the time-honored gimmicks is to point to individual blacks who've achieved recognition. But look at Ralph Bunche. Think about Lena Horne or Mary Anderson. Look at Jackie Robinson. They made it as one of those who has made it. I would like to be thought of as an inspiration to our young. But I don't want them lied to. Name them for me. The examples of blacks who made it. For virtually everyone you name, I can give you a sordid piece of factual information on how they have been mistreated, humiliated. Not being able to fight back is a form of severe punishment.
I come here tonight and plead with you. Believe in yourself and believe that you're somebody. As I said to the group last night, nobody else can do this for us. No document can do this for us. No Lincolnian Emancipation Proclamation can do this for us. No Kennisonian or Johnsonian Civil Rights Bill can do this for us. If the Negro is to be free, he must move down into the inner resources of his own soul and sign with the pen and ink of self-assertive manhood his own Emancipation Proclamation. Don't let anybody take your manhood.
An Awakening is a proud part of the Black Talk Radio Network, the number one independent black digital and podcasting platform.
Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. It's 6:23 on this Sunday edition of Time for an Awakening. Our guest this evening is scheduled to join us. I guess he'll be joining us in about another 5 minutes. It's Pan-African activist, organizer, and professor emeritus of African studies at Cal State University, Northridge. Garveyite, Dr. David Horne, will be joining us in, I guess, about 5 to 7 minutes, Richard.
Okay. Elliot, I was just looking at an article as we're talking about the UNIA, and I'm one who like to make the distinction between Mr. Garvey, the originator of the organization Universal Negro Improvement Association and African Community Leagues, and the people who joined the organization. And I just, you know, because I think, especially in that time, people make it like Mr. Garvey was some kind of, and I hate to use this imagery, but some kind of Svengali. Like he had some kind of notion over, some kind of hypnosis over black people at a time. more than people were making self-assertive decisions. It is this, you know, this here, the context of the amount of divisions that open up that I just came across. I was reading something. It's, you know, and it's a work in progress by a professor, but it says in the years between the Great Migration and the onset of the Great Depression, thousands of African Americans in the rural and small town South sought their future in Marcus Garvey UNIA. Of the one, this the part that got me. Of the 1,176 UNIA divisions in the world, more than 500 were founded in Southern states. That says, you know, at that period, Black people were, you know, seeing something that had global context that they were going to, you know, organize around for their local, you know, local liberating and power development. And these divisions, you know, just to see that, I think that that's a testament of what Black people, global African view that was going on in the South. To out of more than 1,100 divisions, 500 came out of the South itself. I just thought that was interesting.
Yeah. And Richard, some of the same things, just like we spoke about in private conversations, some of the same things that was being organized around during that period. And during the period in the early and mid-60s when Malcolm was talking about taking these issues to the UN, right. It's ironic that in 2026 that these issues are right back full circle again. With different organizing around it. But we'll talk about a lot of these things tonight with our guests in conversation. Joining us, Pan-African activist, organizer, and professor emeritus of African Studies at Cal State University Northridge, Garveyite. Dr. David Horn is with us. Dr. Horn, how are you, sir?
I am alive and moving forward.
Glad to have you on.
Can you hear me?
Yes, sir. Loud and clear. Glad to have you on Time for an Awakening with myself and Brother Richard.
Hey, I'm glad to still be here with you.
Dr. Horn, before we kind of get started with various issues tonight to get your thoughts and perceptions, I want to open up with some comments by Brother Richard to kind of set the table for or the parameters for our conversation this evening. Richard.
Yeah, you know, and thank you, Dr. Horn, for the work that you're doing. Now, I have to say, I was hesitant, should I say. It's interesting, I mean, as a card-carrying Garveyite, right? But okay. It's interesting, one of the people I also high as far as academic, activist scholar, has the same last name. That's Professor Gerald Horn.
Gerald Horn, right.
So it was just interesting to me that we got another Horn in the house to be able to brilliant brother. And be able to be in the same context. But when you know, as we were talking about, you know, in developing the conversation and what I'm looking at, I'm saying, Dr. Horn, I'm trying to form a question out of this. I'm saying the African world is winning in this moment right now, even though we see the world, you know, at war, the Western world at war with the old Arabian empire. So, but what I wanted to know, start off with, how do we look at Mr. Garvey or the UNIA's work in the 21st century? How do you see that we should contextualize, you know, because what Mr. Garvey was put, you know, place and what the members put in place in the earlier, the 20th century, here we are in the 21st century, you know, actually possibly actualizing that more than it was going on then. But to your mind, how should the UNIA, Mr. Garvey's ideology and vision be updated for the 21st century?
Very good question. if we look at the history of Pan-Africanism, we go back to the idea of Pan-Africanism, you go back to let's organize an official way to move forward into the future. The Garveyite idea, you know, the red, black, and green. We need our own flag. They've been punking us and talking bad because we didn't have any way to identify ourselves. If we go from the Garveyite tradition in the 1920s until now, over 100 years later, we are talking about formulating a way to not only make small change, simply get accepted into American society. We are talking about making major change. We are talking about an architecture. We're talking about rebuilding the edifice that will put all Black people together. That takes time. It takes time to develop new leadership. It takes time to develop ideas that are not just based on how we feel. For example, a few days ago, the president of Ghana, you know, John Mahama, made a speech before the UN and talked about we needed to make sure that the world knew that we recognize there had been a crime against humanity in terms of taking Africans away from the continent and enslaving us in different parts of the world. And that there had to be some kind of compensation, there had to be some kind of acceptance of what you did. And again, we have been making that argument for a while. Garvey made the argument, a number of other people made the argument. The problem is, with that, we are asking criminals to accept that they are criminals and to apologize and to make amends for their criminality. That's not the way it works. We cannot just look back at history and say we want to apply the standards we have now to the history then. As much as I loved John Mahama's speech before the UN, I have to take issue with it because in order to have a crime against humanity, you must have an agreement among nation states that such and such is a crime. You all remember the Code of Hammurabi, the whole idea that something has to be recognized in society as incorrect, that you were making a nuisance of yourself in front of a number of people, or you were trying to take somebody's life, or you were trying to take somebody's property. There had to be an agreement that this is a crime. There had to be an agreement that if you do this, then you should be punished. At the time that we were being taken from Africa to other parts of the world, they didn't consider that a crime. They considered we can do it. We make profit from it. Therefore, we are going to do it. It was not recognized as a crime when it was going on during the 15th, 16th, 17th, 18th centuries. It was not a crime then. So looking back from today, trying to say that was a crime is a bit of a problem. It's not really logical. We, in terms of looking for an architecture for Pan-Africanism, have to be logical and clear. Otherwise, the building that we construct will fall down on our heads. We have to understand that trying to assign history, trying to assign ideas and labels from now back then is a problem. Last example, for those who are deep into the reparations movement, and I've been part of that for a long time, but the clear example of how we were treated badly and unlawfully occurred in Oklahoma, you know, with the Tulsa race riot. The state of Oklahoma did a major study, have a big book of what happened, who did what, when they did it, how much they stole, et cetera, et cetera. They have laid out what happened. And even though they have that history and they can assign blame, they have refused to pay, they have refused to acknowledge they did anything wrong. That means we need another strategy. That means we need to relook at how we have tried to assign accountability and responsibility for what we say has to be recognized to be returned to us. We need to do some think tanks, and we need to do them now. We need to figure out a different strategy to construct an architecture for real Pan-Africanism in the world today.
I definitely agree with the need for the architecture, right? And I definitely understand the how the importance, the recognizing symbolic gestures compared to movement of power. I definitely understand and how, okay. The president, Ghana, and those who voted may be considered in that architecture, the UN, which right. was created by European powers for the purpose of European powers,
right.
Can be considered symbolic in the sense of asking the criminal to acknowledge their crime when they say, and they did bring forward, I committed, as you said, I committed no crime because it was legal.
Although, right. I mean, it was legal because you couldn't do anything about it.
Right. But although, and the reason why, and as I pass it over to Elliot, but the two things that you raised, besides the importance of architecture, the importance of think tanks to formulate strategy, right. is from the context of reparations, of repair, the notion of self-repair seems to be first principle. I mean, as a part of the reparations movement, and I've been a part in Philadelphia, part of, in Cobra also. So, one of the considerations that we have to do self-repair for power purposes before we can demand and expect a response to our demand from those who we claim to harm us. So
a very good point.
That becomes an important, which is on us. It's not responding to anybody else.
Right.
But the question I ask, from the period, even from the period when Paul Robeson, said we charge genocide, to now, where the African nation states are saying in that European architecture, and again, the UNIA had its own, but in that European saying that we want Security Council positions, not that it'll be a five-state Security Council, is the sentiment of the African countries and the Asian countries agreeing with Mr. Muhammad that that this was a crime against humanity, a step?
Small step forward, yeah. But not a big enough step to make a difference.
I agree.
It clearly, we are all glad that it was done, and clearly we are glad that the President Muhammad presented it in such a way that we could rally around it and accept it. But no, it was not big enough. It was, if we go back to Marcus Garvey in the 1920s, He said, listen, they have ridiculed us. They made us dance and laugh around, saying, you know, we don't have a flag. Every coon, everybody's got a flag but the coon. We don't have anything to recognize that we had any greatness to acknowledge. And that was where the red, black, and green flag came from. You know, the UNIA gave us that flag so that we could step up into this higher echelon of identifying that we had produced great stuff. We had been great in the movement of human history to where we were at that time. The thing that he taught us, you know, with all, you know, the largest, you know, black organization in the history of the world, you know, that pushing Pan-Africanism, pushing the whole thing about we have to be proud of ourselves. We have to change the vocabulary so that they recognize us too. But we can't spend all of our time trying to convince them of what we have not yet convinced ourselves of. That we were and are great, and that we are important and significant, and that the world will only move forward with us, not without us. We have to recognize that, and we have to figure out ways to do that. That's part of the architecture. Go ahead.
No, I was just agreeing with you. As I pass it back to Elliot, you know, it becomes just, you know, that architecture. You know, one thing that always struck me was, you know, when you mentioned about the flag, and it's a sense of real pride in another moment when they had that convention in New York, you know, the 1920 convention.
Right.
I mean, people, they had delegates and representatives from
all over the world. That's right.
Right. Like, and to that degree, especially we haven't, what you mean, besides just the think tank of developing strategies, the political architecture to where the UN isn't the mechanism that we're going to raise or even define the law. Well, what is the law? Like, they just creating a law. That wasn't a law then. But we can say now, what is law?
That's right.
And what is against the law? But we have to have, as you say, the architecture to do that. And that's still, I think, from the Pan-Africans perspective, is still, as you say, something that we're working towards. But in this conversation, we can get more clarity about that. And I'll just pass it back over to you, Elliot, as we move forward with Dr. Horn in this discussion.
Dr. Horn, it's several issues I want to throw out there in our conversation this evening. And a lot of them deal with the current events that we're facing presently. The first one is this issue that could basically spill over into a global conflict, which is Iran and and Cuba. Now, you know, we talked last week about propaganda and what Mr. Garvey said in reference to propaganda. But we see now that propaganda is a major tool in what's going on presently.
Yeah.
And the use, also in our conversation, is the use of black elected representation here in this country buying into Western propaganda. And I agree with what you're saying about our people being a timepiece, so to speak, on what's going on and what's going to happen globally.
Right.
Now, let me play this, because I want your thoughts on this. Let me play this interview that happened today on Face the Nation with the host interviewing the president of Cuba and what he said in reference to his country and what's going on there. Let me play this. This is the president of Cuba, Miguel Diaz-Canel. I think this is it.
I want to start with President Trump, because President Trump's threats to take over Cuba come as the United States has removed President Maduro from power, has invaded Iran and killed its supreme leader, Do you fear you could be killed or arrested by the United States?
That is a very interesting question. Those of us who have leadership positions in the revolution have a strong commitment to our revolution and to our heroic people. And in this connection, our responsibility entails the conviction and the commitment that we're willing to give our lives for the revolution and for the cause that we defend. So for me, that is not a matter of concern. If the time comes, I don't think there would be any justification for the United States to launch a military aggression against Cuba, or for the U.S. to undertake a surgical operation or the kidnapping of a president. If that happens, there'll be fighting and there'll be a struggle. And we'll defend ourselves. And if we need to die, we'll die, because as our national anthem says, dying for the homeland is to live.
What you're saying is very powerful. But are you afraid for yourself, for your family? Or are you prepared to, as you say, make the ultimate sacrifice if you are attacked?
I have no fear. I am willing to give my life for the revolution. Of course, I wouldn't like that to be the attitude of the U.S. government. Like I've always said in previous meetings and previous interviews, and when I also address the Cuban people, it is evident that there are threats out there. It is part of the rhetoric of the U.S. government. Cuba has done nothing to offend the U.S. Cuba has never said about attacking the United States or interfering with the United States affairs. However, you hear that Cuba is next, that Cuba is going to be next, that there's a way out, that they're going to take over Cuba. So from the position of responsibility within the leadership of the country, that is a warning. And we need to responsibly protect our people, protect our project, and protect our country. So we are preparing ourselves for defense. But what is the concept of our preparation for defense? We have a doctrine which is entirely defensive. It is not aggressive. It doesn't pose a threat. In addition, we also believe that as we prepare ourselves to defend, is the best way to avoid war and the best way to preserve peace.
Let me say something in reference to that, Dr. Hornman. I'm going to turn it over to you to kind of break into it, that for us. Because we see the propaganda that the West has put out in reference to Cuba.
Right.
But let's look at it from our perspective, and I'll just throw a few things out there. We see that when the medical program was in full effect, and which it still is now, but 25 years ago, when the Cuban government reached an agreement, and it might be a little over 25 years ago, reached an agreement with the Black Caucus to send 500 students a year, African-American students, to Cuba to be trained as doctors.
Right.
It was a memorandum of understanding, and it was never acted on by the Black Caucus representative at that time.
It's been acted on, but not at that level.
Yes, you're absolutely right. Not at the level that it should have been. We also see that Assata Shakur went to Cuba and spent the rest of her life there. Was protected by the Cuban government and what America considered an exile. Robert Williams was there, ran a radio station there, and wrote the book Negroes with Guns there in Cuba. Mm-hmm. We know that during the slave trade, a lot of our ancestors that were in this country was traded or ended up in Cuba.
Yeah.
So we see what's going on there. How should black people living in the United States view this situation that's brewing in Cuba?
Let me answer that two ways. Another part of your a historical rendition could have included Cuban soldiers helped tremendously in the African Revolution.
Okay.
When we were trying to get countries free from colonial domination, particularly in Southern Africa, helping to save Nelson Mandela's African group. The Cubans sent, they didn't just say, we support you, we want to help you. They sent troops there to help fight the Afrikaners in the, you know, in the name of and for African people. Cuba has a track record of having participated in African revolutionary activities. This is not to say they don't have racism in Cuba. That's there too. But Cuba has the record. They got the, they have the documents. We have been on your side a lot more than we have not been on your side.
Mm-hmm.
If there is a move by this country against Cuba, there will be a great number of African folk who call themselves United States citizens who will help Cuba. They're not going to help the United States. I'm one of them. I'm a United States citizen. I will help Cuba. We are talking about a country that has demonstrated, not just proclaimed it, they've demonstrated the need for revolutionary activity to create themselves, to make themselves valuable to the world, to basically support African revolutionary activity. They have demonstrated. Therefore, they need to be supported. So if there is any move against Cuba by the United States government, there will be trouble. There will be trouble in, you know, inside, not just outside. So hopefully that does not occur. Hopefully this criminal president does not take it that far.
And I think that's why they're trying as much as they can to have black leadership, not just elected officials, but leadership either on their side promoting Western position or not saying anything. Let me, I think this is what you were talking about, and I just want to play this for the listening audience. This is something Nelson Mandela stated.
How surprised have you been about the furor that your remarks about the Palestinians and that whole Cuba and the flap that has followed in the wake of those remarks? Has that been a surprise to you at all?
I was more astonished than surprised. You must remember that when in 1960 leaders like Oliver Tambo and the young men sitting at the back there, Thabo Mbeki, went out of the country.
Right.
One of the first steps that they took was to visit the West and to ask for assistance. In the course of that visit, they came to the United States of America and asked for help. They did not get that help. They went to Cuba, and the Cuba on the spot pledged support and actually gave it long before the West could do anything to assist us. I am surprised that anybody should now expect us to condemn Cuba, to condemn the PLO, which has been working with us right from the beginning and helping us in our problems. It is totally unrealistic. It is a typical attitude of countries which really do not approach the problem of South Africa from the point of view of the liberation struggle in South Africa, which approach these problems from the point of view of their own interest. What that view wants is that the African National Congress and the liberation movement in South Africa should be used for the purpose of conducting vendettas, enemies of the West. We must join that vendetta in order to advance the interests of the West. That we will not do.
I just figured I would put that in there based on what you said, Dr. Horn.
Thank you. Yeah, right on point. The so now all of the black folk in this country and in the Caribbean who still consider themselves activists, African activists, they would not be helping the United States take over Cuba. There would be a strong protest against that by activists in this country, in spite of understanding that the government would try to punish us. So what? We cannot let Cuba stand by itself. Cuba helped us when we needed help, and we have to remember that.
Because I agree with you wholeheartedly in what you're saying, and we're going to add to that conversation as we go further. But let me play a couple of more clips. And see, to me, these are important because they give the world, and this is what is the intention, they give the world the perception that black folks here in this country are on board with what America is saying. When you don't have black leadership say anything in reference to these issues, or when you have them speaking Western values or the Western propaganda in relation to these issues, that gives the world the perception that black folks here are on board with it when they're not. Let me play across the board responses. And Richard, I want you to weigh in on this too. With three political figures, with two political figures, and one was a cabinet member in the last administration. And they were all on published reports on television recently. Two of them was today. Let me play this response by Byron Donald, who is a Republican representative in Congress, and what he said in reference to not only Cuba, but the situation going on in the Middle East.
Do you think that President Diaz-Canel is someone who the Trump administration can, in fact, make a deal with? Or do you think there needs to be a wholesale change in leadership in Cuba?
I believe there needs to be full-scale regime change in Cuba. What you just heard is that Cuba for 67 years has been a communist dictatorship. They have suppressed the free speech of the Cuban people. The Cuban people today are rationing food. You talked about their power grid. Their economy's flat on their back. If you examine the history of governments around the world, free and open societies like America, that is where the people...
Now, I'm going to continue, but let me just stop there a second. He said that he wants regime change. So that means troops going in. He stated that
that's what it means.
He said the economy is flat on its back. The power grid is down. The economy is flat on its back. And the power grid is being down because of American sanctions. American sanctions did that. 67 years. And plus this embargo that has happened over the past month has caused the power grid to go down because there's no oil being allowed in Cuba.
Right. Right.
So here we are with a Western propaganda spin by a black elected official. I don't care whether he's a Republican or Democrat, because you're going to hear two other party members saying almost the same thing. But let me finish this out.
People actually thrive and succeed and excel in communist dictatorships or theocratic dictatorships where you suppress free speech, you actually don't hold open elections, you take away property, you take away property rights. What you find is that people do not thrive. They do not excel. They cannot build wealth. They can't build strong families. In essence, they can't have the American dream or that dream in any other part of the world. Last thing on this, be very clear. The Iranians have always been using the Straits as economic terrorism against the West to protect their theocratic regime. I mean, we started with Cuba, now we're on Iran. What is the consistency here? So the president is doing what's necessary to accomplish the main objectives here, and that has remained to make sure that Iran does not have a nuclear weapon and to significantly degrade their ballistic missiles capabilities. The Iranians using the Strait of Hormuz against the rest of the world, the president, I believe, is doing the right thing, trying to control the Straits, possibly in order to open that up for international water so you can have trade move freely, not just in that region, but for the rest of the world.
Let me say something very quickly.
Go ahead, Dr. Horn.
In the history of this country, we, black folk, have spent most of our time trying to gain and maintain respectability. We want to be recognized as people who brought something to the table. We were worthy, we were worthwhile. Slavery was not our beginning and end. We were going to move from a point of weakness to a point of strength. And on that journey, in trying to reestablish that kind of respectability, that kind of power in simply being useful and being important. On that journey, David Walker, Frederick Douglass, a whole number of other black folk have always warned us that you can't trust people by whether they are black or by whether they are white. A whole bunch of black people want to hold other black people down.
Mm-hmm.
When Harriet Tubman was talking about, we need to get the hell out of here, we're going to leave. I may not have a big plan, but I know how to move from Maryland to the North. There were black folk who tried to stop her. In the movie on Harriet Tubman, they had this black slave catcher. We had a big argument here in L.A. about, oh, no, there were no black slave catchers. We didn't do anything like that. That's not true. We did. There have always been black folk who crazy. There have always been black folk who have tried to harm other black folk. They tie themselves to the master, and they act like whatever the master wants, some kind of way they are included. They are not included. We have always had people like Donald. We've always had people within our communities who have to be ostracized and maybe even taken out if it comes to that. But your skin color apparently has nothing to do with common sense. And those of us who look like us are not always those of us who are for us. We have to be raised. We have to be educated to understand black folk do not belong in inferior positions. Black folk belong moving forward, moving to the top. But everybody who looks like us ain't gonna be for us. At any period of time in our history here, any period of time in our history in Africa, we have had folk who look like us who were enemies of us.
Okay.
We have to be able to identify them and check their ass out.
Before I go to the next clip I want you to compare it with, let's keep in mind that what he stated, this Donald, about America and this administration need to take control of the Strait of Hormuz. The last time I looked on a map, the Strait of Hormuz runs through the sovereign area of Iran.
Right.
That waterway runs through that area. So what is he talking about, take control of the Strait of Hormuz? And the ships that have been blocked from the Strait of Hormuz is European, American, and Israeli cargo ships. Other ships have been moving back and forth through the Strait of Hormuz.
Right.
Now,
And we'll continue to.
Okay. Now, he stated that the leadership, because he equated Cuba with Iran, leadership need to be removed. That's what he stated. Now let's flip the coin over and let's hear what Hakeem Jeffries said in relation to Iran.
Leader Jeffries, welcome back to Meet the Press.
Good morning. Great to be back.
It's great to have you back. Let's start with the war in Iran, the United States now. Do you think the world is safer now that the Supreme Leader is dead?
Well, certainly as it relates to the Ayatollah, he was a bad actor.
and I'm not going to shed any tears as a result of his departure. I think the big question is, why did we get into this war? What are our strategic objectives? Because they shift every day. And what is the plan to get out of this conflict?
Now, I've stopped it there because, see, black elected officials can't play games. They can't have it both ways. Either these wars and this particular war is morally wrong, or it's not. You can't use the excuse that, oh, they didn't come to Congress and all this type of, this war is wrong or it's right. And these people are running their government. Just like this government here has a Western government based on Western democracy and capitalism. Right. Other countries have other forms of government.
Right.
So he can't say, oh, he's a bad actor. These people are not acting. They're living their lives. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Dr. Horn. Weigh in on that. Weigh in on that.
No, you're on the right track. But one of the things we need to be clear about, as we have moved forward trying to establish respectable places within this American empire, we have adopted, we have grafted onto ourselves way too many of the attitudes and the values of the people that we've said we want to be around.
Okay.
Within the American electoral system, we have produced some exceedingly brilliant politicians. But most of them are simply, I want to get along. I want to be part of this. I want to be accepted in popularity. I want them to let me into the room so I can be part of the meetings. In other words, we have fought to be part of, as opposed to making sure that we took our own integrity and intelligence into those rooms. We have basically, we've lost Dr. King and that whole line of people who understood that moral authority is just as important, if not more important, than political authority. Today, we have black politicians who mainly just want to get elected and be into public office. But they have left behind what a lot of folk in the South grew up with. You got to have some common sense, boy. Wherever you go, you don't embarrass us. Don't get out there and start talking like you're crazy. And, you know, you trying to kiss everybody behind and you trying to just be liked. You got to have some sense. That's the only reason we are raising you, to put you out there so that leadership will go forward. I like Hakeem Jeffries. He is a very good politician, but I understand clearly he is part and parcel of the American government. And mainly what he says will be about protecting the American government. While he may not vote on a resolution that comes up to continue the embargo against Cuba, you know, 60 years old, we should kill that. He may not vote to maintain it. He also won't go out to advocate to get rid of it. Mm. We have to separate black politicians, those who are part of the electoral system, and not all of them are the same. But if you are a black politician, you've already submitted yourself to the American system of government. Mm-hmm. And you want to be a part of that, and you're not going to do anything to have them chase you out of the party. You want to stay in the room. You want to stay in the building. You want to be part of whatever is going on in here. So that means you got to suppress your individuality and your black leadership. You know, there are no Frederick Douglasses who are in political leadership right now. That's not what we got. And so I understand Hakeem Jeffries, and I understand most of the other black politicians, people like Donald. Now they need to be dealt with, because they're not just simply trying to get along. They basically are the ones who turned in the black revolutionaries. When there were black slave rebellions, they're the ones who would go and tell the man who was doing what, who was involved, and how to get them get them captured. But, you know, most of the black politicians today are about getting elected and getting accepted into that particular body of political activity. So you don't expect even a Jesse Jackson. You don't expect another Martin Luther King. You don't expect those who are ready to seek out individuality. You don't expect those to try to create an architecture of real freedom. I wouldn't expect Hakeem Jeffries to vote to maintain the Cuban embargo, to maintain American semi-colonialism in Cuba. I wouldn't expect him to vote to do that. But he's also not going to take a hard position against whatever Trump them come up with.
Well, let me play this last clip before we take a brief break, because this person here personifies what you just stated, Dr. Horn. Let me play this and listen to what he says. Because everything that you just said, this is what he does right here.
Administration, we're gratified to be joined by former defense secretary in the Biden administration, Lloyd Austin. Secretary, thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
Well, you published a weighty op-ed in the New York Times this week titled Now We Know What a Modern War Looks Like, where you outline the lessons the U.S. can already take away from this war with Iran. More on those lessons in just a minute. But first, I just have to ask you, if you were sitting in Pete Hegseth's shoes 40 days ago, would you have advised the president to launch this war?
Well, I certainly won't speculate on what I would have done or not done. I will say that I know a lot about this problem set, having been the Central Command commander and served so long in the U.S. military, and having fought in Iraq. The President of the United States has access to a lot of very detailed and good information. He gets input from a number of advisors, his Secretary of State, in addition to the Secretary of Defense, but the Director of National Intelligence, the Director of the CIA, and so there's a lot that goes into that decision. I don't know what the inputs were, what our allies were saying, and certainly we are a part of an alliance that includes Israel and so I don't know what the exchanges were there, but clearly, you know. I think now it's time to focus on, so we are where we are, and it's time to focus on where we go from here. What do we do about it, and where do we want to wind up?
You talked about the lack of clarity of strategic objectives. What is the exit strategy if regime change, for example, is something that was talked about, and can that be achieved without boots on the ground?
My view is that it's not possible to typically to achieve a change of regime without some boots on the ground, and I don't think an air campaign alone will do that. I also think that if you really want to see a regime change, then work needs to have been done with the elements in country, and I'm not saying that hasn't been done, you know, with some of the people in country, so that they're ready to take fill the vacuum when there is an absence of leadership.
Elements in country. I think we can understand what that means, because we've seen a lot of elements that's already been in people's country that have committed violence or killed and everything else. So but we see what he's advocating there. So, wow.
But again, he is a former general in the military. I mean, he is a former major commander in the military. He's upset that the people who got this country into the tete-a-tete with Iran clearly did know planning. You know, they're stupid. You know, they started a fight without having an exit strategy. They started a fight without knowing who they're fighting. They assumed, and they should not have done that. And if Iran really, really, really wanted to get a nuclear weapon, they are a neighbor of Pakistan. This is not just, you know, they happen to know each other. They share over a 15,000-mile border. They are both Muslim countries. Yeah, one may be one branch of Islam, another, but yeah. hey, they are all Islamic. If they really, really wanted to get a damn nuclear weapon, they could have already had one from Pakistan. People get to be, they call themselves leaders. They get to be stupid because they call themselves leaders and assume that we will just fall in line with their stupidity. We have got to think deeper and higher for ourselves. We cannot follow these people into hell.
Yes.
That's where they're going. We cannot go with them. We got to know when to, okay, that's it. I'm drawing the line. Oh, hell no, I'm not going there. Black people are going to, they're being reminded right now. We must make the decisions to save ourselves.
Yes.
So these people cannot save themselves.
Yes.
They're already in purgatory, and they're on their way straight to hell. We are the first people on this planet. By the way, let me say this. We've been calling ourselves African descendants way too damn long. Everybody on the damn planet is an African descendant. Everybody came from Africa. We need to start calling ourselves African ascendants. We need to think about moving forth, moving up, moving out, not just staying here as these crazy people keep going down. We are not people going down. We are people going up. We just have to keep reminding ourselves of that.
We're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, we'll continue the discussion. You can get involved, too, by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. Our guest this evening in conversation, Pan-African activist, organizer, professor of emeritus of African studies from Cal State University, Northridge, Garvey, Dr. David Horn is with us this evening. And again, you can get involved by dialing 215-490-9832. Time for an awakening. We'll be right back.
There you go. Time for an awakening.
Listening to Time for an Awakening. Time for an awakening. With host Brother Elliot and Brother Richard on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency and business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Escape the digital plantation. Abibitumi.com, Abibitumi.tv, Abibitumi.tv.com, Abibitumi.store are here for you. You are ready to be free of non-African social media. Don't run from danger, run to safety. Abibitumi.com is here for you. You are ready to be free of digital plantations to control your own products. Abibitumi.store is here for you. ABIBITUMI, Black Power, ABIBITUMI, the only word you need to know to join your global KMETU Black family, to join your interconnected KMETU Black communities. Escape the digital plantation now. Abibitumi.com, Abibitumi.tv, Abibitumi.tv.com, Abibitumi.store. We are here for you. Escape the digital plantation.
It does not profit black people or poor people anything to have the vote and not be able to select the candidates who they want to choose. Now, how can you choose between Lyndon Johnson, Nixon, Agnew, Wallace, and Humphrey? There is no choice. Evil is evil. There's nothing in between that. I think the vote can only be used as a tool of organization. We can only use the vote to organize our people. Now, to really believe that we can put someone in office and that these people would be responsive to our needs is naive, politically naive. Because even if one of the black candidates who ran for office was to take the office of president, then black people must be prepared to fight against that person. Why? Because, you see, the system mandates the action of the individual. The individual does not determine how this country will function. This country works off the military-industrial complex, which means that it's profitable to wage war. And unless you devise another plan, another scheme to sustain, to boost this economy, then it's going to be necessary to wage war. Whether, a black individual is in office or a white individual is in office. Well, we're talking about a complete a change in system.
The system is rotten to the core. That's why every time we have had a presidential election, whether it's white or black, you always have to choose between the lesser of two evils. So you either vote for Satan or the devil, and you catch hell with either one.
This included comedians, comics, trumpet players, baseball players. Show me in the white community where a comedian is a white leader. Show me in the white community where a singer is a white leader, or a dancer or a trumpet player is a white leader. These aren't leaders. These are puppets and clowns that have been set up over the white community and over the black community by the white community and have been made celebrities and usually say exactly what they know that the white man wants to hear.
One black man believes in violence. One believes in integration. One believes that one day after we all marry white women, we'll all be a light brown color and there'll be no problem. One believes that if we get enough politics and education, we can take over the country and be the mayor and the president. One believes, such as I, that separating on some land will solve it. Cleaning up our own neighborhoods, respecting our own women, and doing something for ourselves and quit begging white people. This is our solution.
You know, we really are being colonized. In a colony, The education is controlled from outside. The politics is controlled from outside. The economics is controlled from outside. The police in a colony are not there to serve and to protect, but there to keep the colonized ones from disturbing the status quo. The question is, do we want to continue to live as a colony, or do we want to be like the original 13 colonies and decide that we've had enough? Let's break from a colonial past and let's seek freedom.
Time for an Awakening is a proud part of the Black Talk Radio Network, the number one independent black digital and podcasting platform.
Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. It's 7:25 on this Sunday edition of Time for an Awakening. Our guest this evening in conversation, Pan-African activist, organizer, professor emeritus of African studies at Cal State University, Northridge, Garvey Ike, Dr. David Horn is with us. You can get involved in the conversation, too, by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. Richard?
Yes. You know, Dr. Horn, as Elliot, the series of questions and thoughts Elliot raised, before the break, shows it goes counter to what you raise as far as what we need to do is have an architecture of our own, or to have a strategy of our own, and to operate out of a level of power as a national people, but as a global African people, because of the disruption over the last 500 years or more. And the reason why I really appreciate the work you're doing and the work you've done in the context of looking at the UNIA and Mr. Garvey as a model structure. Yes, having its contradictions, right? The UNIA as a structure, you know, had its contradiction. And Mr. Garvey and the ideological framework of us being a sovereign people, a global sovereign people, even if we are in different locations, these contradictions. So and one of those was, for example, the backwards tribes of Africa, like going, you know, creating the nation, you know, nation or a national empire on the continent, you know, and to do that. That's a contradiction that I think now, 100 years later, we are another part of resolving. But I wanted to get to this point where I see that you've been working on, when I'm thinking of the structure, and I wanted to get your views about this, because I think me and Elliot, I have a different interpretation and learning. And this is, you're involved with the Six Region Diaspora Cause, right? And so, as we understand it, the Six Region was set up, you know, first with the Organization African Union, now in the AU, to be for those in the diaspora. It's a structure that Africans in America could be a part of. I guess that's my point of clarification from you. As you see the mandate of the Six Region, not just African of the continent, you know, who are come to different places, than Africans to go to Europe, Africans to go to the Caribbean, Africans to go to come to North America. But for African Americans, as we're identified, that we can be able to have a seat at the Sixth Region. But what all of we've been told is that we don't have a structure. We're a part of a nation state. Those are children from a nation state. Am I misreading in relationship to
the
of the Sixth Region? How do you see it, and how do you see us moving to where we can legitimately utilize that structure while we're in a nation state is hostile to us even thinking about being a part of a structure in that manner.
The African Union came into being to essentially complete the job of uniting African countries into a United States of Africa. The the continuation of real Pan-Africanism as part of laying out a map and laying out a strategy to get that done. The executive secretary of the earlier organization, the Organization of African Unity, the OAU, the one that set up, All Africa Day in May 25th, he had made a motion during one of the early AU meetings that in order for Africa to be united, United States of Africa, so to speak, then those who had been taken out of Africa, their descendants or ascendants should be allowed a voice in the map that would get us to a United States of Africa. Unfortunately, the definition of that group was a problem then and it's a problem now. But the recommendation was to bring forth the African ascendants, bring forth those who had been raised in Latin America, South America, Central America, because they're not all the same, North America, Australia, Europe, etc. Bring those people into a united enough body so that they can have a say-so in developing this architecture for a United States of America. When we took
Africa,
when we took that on, we started going into different communities in this country and into Brazil. We went to England, et cetera. We went in and tried to explain to the African populations there that they had been invited to come and join the African Union. But they had to organize themselves and elect those people in from their communities who respected Africa and wanted to rejoin Africa. But they had to elect their own representatives. Because you got the bureaucrats from the African Union involved in trying to tell us how to organize ourselves, it all went haywire. And the representatives from the African community scattered all over the world have not yet been officially welcomed into, nor have they had a voice in moving the African Union forward to a United States of Africa. That needs to be clarified, that needs to be changed, but it has not yet been done.
And with that thought in mind, and I'm looking at those of us, and you raise an interesting point as far as the bureaucratic and sister and I, she was the ambassador for the UN. You have to help me, Elliot. Arakana,
Chinua-Kwayo, Dr. Kwayo.
Yeah. She was a adamant advocate.
Appointed by the African Union.
Mm-hmm. Right. And as she was gaining traction to assist those like yourself who were on the ground in organizing, then they, the bureaucrats pushed her out,
Let me go back a minute. Let me add something right where you are. Even though in theory, the African Union clearly has a mission. Clearly, they've laid out some great plans. But it is peopled by those who have been educated by the colonizers.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the functionaries in the African Union apparatus are French. They think French, and they act French. They speak the French language, and to them, that's where real civilization is. Dr. Ari Khanna got on the nerves of the gentleman who was the head of the African Union Secretariat, that is the entity that sets up the meetings and runs the everyday business affairs of the African Union. Dr. Ari Khanna was doing speeches talking bad about French colonialism and about how the French need to get the hell out of Africa, really get out and not stop diddling around and training leaders to kill other leaders, that kind of thing. They need to leave. And the gentleman who was in charge of the African Union Secretariat fired her on his own. Said, you cannot go around attacking France. You cannot go around doing that. The African Union didn't send you out to do that. Inside the African Union, there are all these internal conflicts about language and about culture and about how we're going to get this thing organized. Partially, they have not paid enough attention to the leaders who have come before. They have not paid enough attention to Garvey. They have not paid enough attention to Nkrumah. They have not paid enough attention to Lumumba. There have been a number of great African leaders who tried to get us out of the colonial strictures that we've been put into. We have not gone back and taken the lessons that they taught us to create the architecture. The African Union is still too much of a bureaucratic entity, and the African ascendants have not been incorporated yet. We don't have a voice inside the African Union yet. They're not dealing with our branch of the white hell that we're all part of. You know, each branch of African folk who've been scattered all over the damn world can testify to these are the problems that we have to overcome in order to get a united Africa.
Okay.
There, even though the sixth region has been identified and that we have been invited on paper, that invitation has never been activated, mainly because there are too many inconsistencies and too much colonial training by those running the African Union. The same gentleman that I'm talking about who fired Dr. Ari Khanna is the same gentleman who had put Israel into the African Union. Israel was assigned
observer. Observer status?
No.
Okay.
Not a member. They were a special guest.
Yeah, I think it was observer status.
Observer status, right. They could go to the meetings, to the general meetings. They could not really participate in decision making, but they were there watching black folk. They were there taking notes on what black folk were doing.
And denied Haiti at the same time.
They denied Haiti. They never should have done that.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, that same gentleman is the one who gave Israel that status. Israel lost it. They don't have it now, but that same brother who was in charge of the AU Secretariat was the one who fired Dr. Ari Khanna and was also the one who brought Israel in. We have to understand that there will be contradictions. There will be people who look like us who want to do the right thing but just don't know how to do it. This is going to be confusing. It's going to be dangerous, but we have got to keep moving forward. We got to get away from the damn plantation. We've got to get back to running our own African countries. Otherwise, we stay victimized by you know, these warmongers and these people who basically want to just be in charge. It's still about property and money. It's still about, if I own the property, then I can dictate everything else that happens about the property. Private property may not be the best way to go. But in terms of African people, we have got to help each other, teach each other, and prepare each other to move forward. And we've also got to call each other out when we're on the wrong damn track.
And that's, you know, because, and you know, Elliot played the clips earlier that represented those who are a part of that. And I'm using the term that you use for consistency, a part of that architecture, whether right. we talk about the UN or whether we talk about the Congress and the Senate and the presidency. These are architectures that are to maintain white power. Right.
Exactly.
And even as you mentioned, in relationship to even the African states are architectures, that those states that were created by European powers to maintain those European powers. And France is a good example. And what's going on about Young in the Sahel is a good example of the resistance to that. You know,
exactly. Absolutely.
To that. But what you raise, and I'm, you know, another thing I've seen that you're engaged in, because it seemed those of us who have the social consciousness of what the UNIA and Mr. Garvey have, it's an organization. When we talk about architecture, to me, we're talking about structure. We're talking about a power, you know,
right.
But we're also exactly. talking about the effectiveness of our organizational ability internally to deal with the opposition. That is, as you said, Black folks who look like us and those who are, some would say, been our historical enemies. We right. have to create an architecture that protects those in leadership, and Elliot raised, in the sense of how Iran is now, you know, positioning themselves from the perspective of power, state power.
Right.
I say all that to come to this point that I see that you're the Council of Black Political Organizations.
Right.
Because that becomes the possibility, and then correct me, you know, for using the wrong characterization by saying possibility, because we have a history of putting together Black political architecture. But what you gave the example that happens in the AU, there's these different views of those who wish to be a part of America's national architecture or a global architecture, and those who think we should have our own sovereign architecture, even here in America. What is the Council of Black Political Organization, and how, and is that contradiction we're still working as you see that body coming together?
That body is still being formed. It had a brief existence and effectiveness in the 1990s, but it rapidly fell apart. What happens is personalities get too involved in who's going to be in charge and who's going to get the publicity, who's going to be recognized as the leader. That's part of the same kind of slave mentality that came out of the issue was not how do we all escape. The issue becomes who's going to lead the escape. Getting the hell away from here has always been a lot more important than who's going to take the damn lead. Anyway, we have to keep reminding ourselves of that. So the council can come back into existence, but it has to change the formula by which it was being operated. Again, we got to get away from this individualistic "I can save us all" attitude, because that's not gonna work. The thing about who we are and where we are and where we're going, and a number of us are now trying to get to do this, we need to rethink our logic and rethink our, you know, the terminology that we're using. For example, we still are calling ourselves the diaspora, the African diaspora. We are not. That's the terminology that was kind of lumped on us by a Jewish African historian, you know, a Jewish professor who taught African history. And we it was perpetuated by a push by a very, very good black scholar out of Howard. But again, a diaspora means you voluntarily left. The Jewish diaspora is not the one that the Germans put into them and put into the concentration camps. They were the ones that, you know, who escaped. Diaspora means you left voluntarily. The African folk who are scattered all over the damn world in, you know, Latin America, Central America, South America, et cetera, that we talked about before, we didn't leave voluntarily. We were drug off. We were, you know, we are the descendants of a lot of people who were put into slavery. Again, we are African ascendants. We are not African diaspora. But again, we got to change the terminology so that we can then formulate the plans to escape and to build and to move on. The way the world is being led now is being led into a hole, a deep hole that people may not be able to come out of. If we follow them, we are doomed. We need to construct a different future. Marcus Garvey was talking about, based on the rights of the Negro people that they came out with in the 1920s, he was talking about constructing another place for African people. You know, some people say, well, he was pushing his own leadership to get that done, and maybe, but somebody has to lead. We got to know what route to take. We got to know what to take on that route, whether we need raincoats, whether we need heavy clothing. Somebody has to be able to direct us. There's nothing wrong with having pan-African directors. What we need is for people to stop getting so carried away with being in charge that they think their being in charge is the reason that we're moving forward. Leadership needs to stop taking themselves so damn seriously that there'll be no movement without me. There'll be no movement without y'all doing what I tell y'all to do. The reparations movement in this country, that's part of the damn problem with that now. Too many leaders are not enough planning, not enough logic, not enough laying out a concrete plan to get something done. I use the example of the World War II. The Germans were kicking everybody's behind. They were vicious. They were super soldiers. In order to defeat the Germans, there had to have been a multi-layered, logical plan. Everybody had their part to play. It was a plan that was multi-level chess. That is how the Germans were defeated. Not, we just going to go and get this done. We're going to bomb the hell out of everybody. That didn't work that way. So what we are saying is part of what we don't have right now is a consistent teaching of those who have gone before, the builders who have gone before, the builders of Pan-African architecture who've gone before. We have not learned enough from where they took us and where else we need to continue. Elijah Muhammad, Elijah Poole was a member of the Marcus Garvey organization. Kwame Nkrumah, who was the greatest Pan-Africanist to this day so far. Captain Traore may surpass him the way he's going, but Kwame Nkrumah was a student of Marcus Garvey. He went to the Marcus Garvey had already been put out of the country, but there were classes being taught by Garveyites. And Kwame Nkrumah came to this country and went to those classes. And in fact, he wrote about, in one of his 23 books, he wrote about his connection to Garvey. That's why Ghana now has red, black, and green in their flag. So we've had brilliant individuals who have come and done their part and taken us forward. I'm saying we need to train some more of those, and we need to have this consistent think tank mentality that is not just one of us, it's all of us. We got to plan it out. We got to have a logical approach. We got to lay out what has to be done and who has to be responsible for taking care of it. Last example, I'll stop. When we're back in the 50s, when in the South, black folk were still treated like trash, treated like purely BS. You were paying your money, and you couldn't even ride a damn bus that you were paying your money for. People basically were pushed around and disrespected, you know, without question. When Cedric the Entertainer basically did that that joke in Coming to America about, you know, I'm not going to pay any respect to somebody who just want to sit down on our ass. See, we can't allow that kind of disrespect to people who basically put their lives on the line. At that time, basically, a white person could kill a black person with impunity. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, just for the hell of it. I tell you to get out of my damn seat because I want to sit down and you don't get out, bang, you dead, and nobody will do anything about it. My point is, in order to get that particular disrespect changed. You know, we complained about it, you know, we didn't like being disrespected, et cetera. But in order to get that changed, Martin Luther King and a number of his other ministers and other people connected to him, Andrew Young, et cetera, they've laid out a plan to get that done. What was the object? We have to be able to sit in the vehicles that we are paying our money to ride in. It's our money, it's green, it's coins, you take our money, then damn it, we deserve to be able to sit down. You know, we're tired. We got to plan out how to overcome this tendency of white people to say, I don't give a damn how much money you paying, you a nigger, and I'm going to treat you that way, and you're going to accept it. They had to plan it. They had to keep revising the plan. In those days, white people killed black people with impunity, and there was no punishment for that. They planned it. The black folk stayed on it, and it wasn't about I'm in charge, or you in charge, or he's in charge, or she's in charge. We planned it. We laid out the steps. They took the steps. They defeated that bus company. They basically economically defeated the bus company. We need to get back to that kind of economic planning. Black folk control a hell of a lot of money in this country, a hell of a lot of resources. We can and should organize a boycott, not just of a particular store, not just, you know, a grocery store or a convenience store. No, we need to tell people, you know what? This Christmas or this Thanksgiving, we're not going to spend a penny.
Yep.
We'll keep our money in our pocket. And two of y'all treat us the way we deserve being treated. That kind of economic boycott laid out, systematically planned and organized would work. We need to get back to doing that. That's what this architecture is about that I'm talking about. We need to think tanks to be able to lay out some plans and then implement those plans to make sure we get the respect that we deserve as we're moving on to higher ground. White people are not going to higher ground. They're going someplace else. For us to get to higher ground, we got to plan it and we get and then implement it.
Let me grab it. Go ahead. I'm sorry, Richard.
No, as I said, I agree.
Okay, let me go and see if a couple callers want to get involved. Let's go to Philadelphia. Philadelphia? Are you there?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, I hear you loud and clear.
This is Nabila.
How are you?
I appreciate
your guest conversation, and I participated in a Zoom call by a group. I forgot the whole name, but they called themselves the Afro Descendants.
Right.
So I was kind of shocked when everyone that was speaking was very well mannered. They spoke very well. They all had Arabic names that they weren't pronouncing as Arabic names. They were saying them like they were English.
Right.
But all of the women, I couldn't tell they was African or African descendants. Everybody had straightened hair, bangs. You know, they just looked like nice ladies. So it kind of, you know, the whole time I'm listening to the show, I mean, it was a good presentation, but I'm saying, well, where's the Afro? Where is the Afro? What's going on here? Why are you using certain words, but then not presenting that? So I just wanted to add that to the conversation.
Thank you, sister. Good point.
Thank you for your contribution. Dr. Hunt?
Hey, I agree with her. The you know, we, too many of us are still imitating other people. It's, you know, and why we sometimes choose the names that other people give their children in their culture, as opposed to choosing names from our own culture, what we've done. Let me give an example of what I'm talking about. When I was in junior high school in Florida, part of my junior high school and high school years, you know, yeah, we did the United States, you know, we did the Star Spangled Banner, and we had to do the Pledge of Allegiance every morning. But we also did the Black National Anthem. You know, we played that every morning before we did any other classes, before we did any other work. So besides getting the Americana version, teaching me, you know, that I'm just supposed to be a good citizen, I was also getting the idea that Black people had a whole history long before we got to that point where I was. We need to get back to teaching each other that we are important just because we are who we are. And because we're important, we deserve more than what we're getting here. We need to work our way out of here. Plan it, strategize, work our way out of here. Stop disrespecting each other and move forward. African people for African people.
Yes.
let's go to Toronto. Toronto?
Can you hear me, sir?
Loud and clear.
How's everybody doing? I just had a question for Dr. Horn. Richard talked about the South having the largest, you know, most chapters of UNIA African Communities League. I'm looking at Tony Martin's book, where his book is Race First, and according right. to him, Louisiana has 74. Branches, Virginia had 48, which is two. Number three was North Carolina, which had 47. Pennsylvania, 45. West Virginia had was number five, and they had 44. Mississippi had 44. They were number six. Ohio was number seven. They had 39. Arkansas had 38. They were number eight. Your home state, Brother Horn, was number nine, had 32, and New Jersey was number 10 with 31. I just want to ask Brother Horn.
That's a great book you got.
Yes, sir, it's a great book. Why do you feel that Garvey had so much impact on those specific places in the world and in the United States?
Because Garvey essentially pushed the whole idea, taught people, you got to respect yourselves. There is nothing wrong with being an African in this world. You have to recognize that
you can do great things. African people have done great things. We founded the world. We built the first civilizations. African people have done great things. We can do great things again. You've got to recognize the African man, the African woman in your presence, and we got to move forward. Coming up in the South, that's not what they taught. They taught us that because you were not alabaster colored like them, that there was something wrong with you. You know, they were good at training and teaching us the wrong way. For example, in our early history, they taught us that, you know, we couldn't, black people couldn't swim. You know, we were scared of water. The early civil rights efforts in the 1960s, a lot of them were at swimming pools. You know, we had to demonstrate in order to be allowed to get in the damn public swimming pools. Well, the first slave function, the first large slave function in this country for black folk was swimming. We were the swimmers. We were the divers. We got the food out of the water. It did not start on a cotton or sugarcane plantation. So what we are saying is that in the South, in those areas that you identified, you had folk who had to be reminded of their black majesty, their African majesty, that they were here to do something positive, organize yourselves, and move forward. That's why so many in the South.
Could I ask you one more question? I would like to know, Garvey, has there been any other, Garvey's newspaper, Negro World, has there been, we had the Mama Speaks and the Black Panther paper, right. But has there been any other publication since then that Garvey's paper, I guess, was published in French, English, and I think Spanish, but has there been any other publication as successful?
No.
Widespread or in terms of the bilingual question? I know the Burning Spears printed in English and in Spanish, but right. Could you deal with that?
Yeah, the Garvey's paper was the most international news organ that black folk have ever had. We have had, like you said, Burning Spear. We've had a number of other entities that have gotten out the information and the news that well, but no, nobody before and nobody since Garvey's UNIA had been able to have a newspaper entity that widespread, that got all over the world, that got to South Africa, that got to Australia, that got to wherever black folk were. They got a copy of the UNIA newspaper, the Negro World. So no, we have not done that anymore. That was the most successful.
It was humans that spread it, I understand.
What was the last thing you said? It was who?
Great. There were African seamen, you know, people
that's right.
Who worked up on boats, took it to, and I remember reading that someone in Kenya, they used to take the Negro
right.
World to Kenya, and people would take it and, you know, spread it through the countryside.
Right. They did it in South Africa. They did it in Kenya. They did it in Ethiopia. They did it in Ghana. If you remember, right here in this country, David Walker's appeal, the idea that we have to plan to break out of these chains that they're putting us in. You know, written by a black man who had been able to step away from the plantation. David Walker's appeal was passed out through sailors putting the newspaper in their pockets and people traveling around and ministers. We were able to do that. We were able to, through the community, pass messages, pass information past plans. We need to get back to that. It worked before. It worked. It's worked in every community that we've been a part of. We have never been totally dependent on news and information coming from other people to us, because it'll always be filtered. It'll always be oriented toward keeping us in the position that we are in and keeping them in a heightened position. We can do this. Garvey's paper did it. David Walker's appeal did it. And we've done it before.
Thank you.
Thanks for your contribution. Dr. Horn, you all right time-wise?
I'm fine.
Okay, good, good. We're going to take a brief break. When we come back, we'll go straight back to the phones. Phoenix is up next. We're going to New Mexico and then New York City. In that order. Time for Awakening. Our guest this evening, Pan-African activist, organizer, professor emeritus of African Studies at Cal State University Northridge. Garveyite, Dr. David Horn is our guest. And you can get involved, too, with a question or comment by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. Time for an Awakening. We'll be right back.
Listening to Time for an Awakening. Time for an Awakening. With host Brother Elliot and Brother Richard on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today, 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
Escape the digital plantation. Abibitumi.com, Abibitumi.tv, Abibitumi.tv.com, Abibitumi.store are here for you. You are ready to be free of non-African social media. Don't run from danger, run to safety. Abibitumi.com is here for you. You are ready to be free of digital plantations to control your own products. Abibitumi.store is here for you. Abibitumi. Black power. Abibitumi. The only word you need to know to join your global Kometiu Black family, to join your interconnected Kometiu Black communities. Escape the digital plantation now. Abibitumi.com. Abibitumi.tv. Abibitumitv.com, Abibitumi.store. We are here for you. Escape the digital plantation.
We are the watchmen on the wall. You are too. You watch with a political eye. We watch from a spiritual eye. But we're supposed to be the watchmen for the people that vote for us. The sad thing is the people vote. They don't give you the money to run your campaigns. So here come big business.
How are you? How are you, Judge? How are you, Alderman? How are you, Congressman? How are you? How are you, Reverend? Well, what can I do for you today, Reverend? You can't do nothing for me. See, that's what we got to be careful of. We got to be careful of who we bow down to. But see, when you get in your congregation and you talk this Jesus, this powerful Jesus that's sitting at the right hand of the Father with all power in his hand, then you go with your hat in your hand to the governor, to the mayor, to the president, begging for some crumbs. You have sold your God cheap. And you make the white man downtown disrespect all of us.
There are between 38 and 50 million people in the United States of America who are poverty-stricken, making income less than the poverty level. And yet, this is the richest nation in the history of the world. Our national gross product this year will go beyond $800 billion. And yet, there are between 38 and 50 million people who are poverty-stricken. Now, something wrong. A lot of people are afraid to say it. But I don't mind saying it. You see, somebody said to me the other night, don't you think, Dr. King, you are going to have to start speaking more in terms of the administration's policy? Because since you started talking against the war in Vietnam, it's hurt the budget of your organization, and people who once respected you don't respect you anymore. And I had to look over and say, sir, I'm sorry, but you don't know me. I'm not a consensus leader. I don't determine what is right and wrong by looking at the budget of my organization. And I don't determine what is right and wrong by taking a Gallup poll of the majority opinion. And so because there's something wrong, our struggle must continue.
Some of us see the United States as the righteous empire, imperialism, colonies, and the colonized. Either you are on our side or you are on the side of evil. This is a war of good versus evil, and of course, our side is the good side. Our track record to the contrary notwithstanding. This is a war of right versus wrong, with our side being right, including our extermination of the Indians, our enslavement of the Africans, our training of assassins, our unqualified support for Zionism, our complete disregard of both the Palestinians and the United Nations resolution supporting the Palestinians, our suppression of third world peoples, and our disregard for the world's opinion about our racism and our refusal to discuss reparation for blacks and the victims of the West African chattel slave trade. No, our absolute arrogance and refusing to acknowledge any wrongdoing in the slave trade. We won't even say, I am sorry, and it's probably because we ain't sorry. Like I have said for years, if we repent, we just might have to repay. And we ain't about to repay. We can repay the Jews, we can repay the Japanese, but we ain't about to repay the Africans, because this is America. United we stand, and in God we trust. That's what you got on your money, but that ain't hardly what you got on your mind. What we trust in is the almighty dollar. Our money and our military. We are a righteous empire. Empire, imperialism, colonies, and the colonized. And you're either on our side or you're on the wrong side.
Time for an Awakening is a proud part of the Black Talk Radio Network, the number one independent black digital and podcasting platform.
Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. It's 8:14 on this Sunday edition of Time for an Awakening. Our guest this evening in conversation, Pan-African activist, organizer, professor emeritus of African studies at Cal State University, Northridge, Garveyite, Dr. David Horn is with us. And you can get involved with a question or comment for our guest by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. Let's go to Phoenix. Are you there?
Yes, yes. Your brother Elliot and brother Richard, and good evening to the great Dr. Horn. Marcus here.
Hey, good evening, brother.
Well, I'm gonna make a statement, then I'm gonna ask the doctor a question. So in reference to what the brother asks about Garvey's and the having these chapters here, you know, Garvey's strength was right here in America, you know. That was his power base, because you notice when they deported him from America, he never got the support again that he got from the black people here in America. Right. There's a uniqueness about the black people here in America. You see, the white man made a mistake, you see, because he treated the black people here so bad consistently that he created a racially conscious group, because the black people in America are the most racially conscious black people on the planet, you know, and the most detribalized black people on the planet, you see? So yeah. That's why they don't want the black people here to go to Africa, collaborate with other Africans, because when I was coming to America in the 80s, I went to the American embassy. It was a brother that was interviewing us.
Okay.
And you know what he said to us? I'll never forget this. He said, after he interviewed us, he said, yes. He said, when you get to America, don't associate yourself with those black people because they're lazy. You see? Now, So that's the agent they have there, you know. That's it. And that man you talk about right there in the UN, you call him a gentleman, but I call him a jellyback step and fetch it negro. That's the appropriate name for him, because you know the African Union, you know, they made a mistake and put me in one of their groups, right, with the youth, the African youth group, right?
Okay.
Because they're grooming a set of leaders to come and take over from this set. Man, I tell you, it's the most antebellum, anti-black folks I had to leave, because it was making me sick. So that's who they're grooming to come and take over. You see?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I don't have no respect for the African Union whatsoever, because I knew what they couldn't even get together an army to stop what was taking place in the Sudan. You know what I'm saying? So I don't, they are just toothless. So now the question, I pose this question, because as I said, the African here is the most detribalized one on the planet. What input can we have here to help save Africa? See, to help, what is should be our input into Africa? Because they can't seem to get it together over there, because everybody looking in each other's face to see what tribe you're from, or, you know, oh, I don't get along with this one. So what does this detribalize Africa? What input can we have to help stabilize Africa? Because we have to have an input, because if we lose Africa, we could chuck it up. We lose it all. Lose Africa as black folks, we lose it all. So that is my question to you, Professor. Thank you.
That's a hell of a question. Thank you. What we
can do is what we have been doing, just not enough of. We were able to overcome slavery and the slave trade in this country by teaching young folk, young African males, young African females, this is not where you belong. You are not born to be a slave. Your job is to learn how to get all of us out of this. So each generation, we would teach youth to organize themselves based on our principles about moving forward, about working together, about coming up with a language and a message through the music, through the church, through the the signs. But we would train each other, youth, through the youth, to lead us forward. They are not doing that enough right now on the continent, although the youth are taking it unto themselves to do it without a lot of support sometimes from the older folk. We have to train the youth to pay attention to what's already been done. We've had a history of people trying to move it forward, find out what they did, find out what worked and what did not work, incorporate that into the next stage. It will be the young people who are going to take us forward, but they must be grounded. They must be grounded in the work that's already been done. They must know about Amy Jacques Garvey. They must know about Marcus Garvey. They must know about Martin Luther King and all the Black folk who have said, we don't belong here. We don't belong in the damn plantation. We don't belong as slaves. We belong further and upward. Young people are the ones who have to lead us, but we have got to teach and train the youth. It's not about how you can boogie and how you can get high. Can you calculate? Can you figure out the plan to move forward? That's what we are talking about now. We got to make sure the youth, Black African youth, they are trained to take us out of this, to take us above and out of the volcano.
Okay, and I follow up with this little one again. There is a little paragraph in the philosophy and opinions of Marcus Garvey called "The Aptitude of the Negro to Disobey Orders Coming from Himself." Marcus Garvey said, he said, out of every 100 orders he gave, only 2 out of the orders were carried out. So right. He concluded and said, he don't think Black people we're gonna rectify this problem here. We have to take these people into a different environment,
right,
and have strict, rigid, civil, to correct our people. Because what I notice in America, our people get rewarded for wrongdoing. The system rewards wrongdoers.
You're right.
So, question again, do you think we can solve the problem here? If we stay, do you think we're going to solve
it? No.
500? You answered the question. Thank you very much.
And Brother Marcus, let me say something in reference to what you said. Because you said you attended a meeting where they had young Blacks that was there. What meeting was that? I'm just curious.
The African Union, they had this WhatsApp group that was for young people. Because, I stay in contact with them people in Africa a lot. But they think I'm young. They don't realize how old I am. But they think I'm young. So they put me in the group. You see, but it's a group that the African Union, they are grooming another sector people to take over, to come and run the show, right? So in the group, you know, I'm listening to these people and I'm like, is this the next set that's coming? Is this coming? I say, if this is what's coming, we're in trouble.
Well, let me say something.
I mean, it was so bad, I got sick. Mm-hmm. I had to leave.
Well, let me
I
say,
had to say, you know what?
Mm-hmm. Let me say something in reference to that, Brother Marcus. See, these people know. They know the signs of the time, so to speak. They mm-hmm. know that our people are the timepiece to what's going on. It's some of our people that don't. So they're planning their strategy. When you see some of these young people, they got agents there, whether it's on the continent or here, that's working in their behalf. So they're going to teach young people. Listen, they're doing it here at black universities, at HBCUs. Yeah. We have talked about it on this program. They're trying to cultivate our own children to be against anything that we're talking about, some of the subjects that we're talking about on this program. They're trying to cultivate our young people to be against that. But these people are worried about that. That's why they're concerned that in 2050, I think they said that Africa is going to have the second youngest population on Earth. They're worried about that. They are worried. They're not just taking it, we got them under control. They know they don't. But they're not going to just give up. They're going to fight. But we,
like you said,
we got to keep
that timepiece.
Yes, we got to keep pushing. We're going to win. Righteousness is going to win out. Our ancestors knew that. Evil and Satan is not going to win. We're going to win. It might take longer if we don't do what we're supposed to do, but we're going to win.
Yes, and our people were smart because they what they did was they said, we're going to take low now. During that time of slavery, they said, we're going to take low. But the name of the game is, he who lived the longest wins. And we're going to win. I just said, because these people don't know nothing about living. All they know is killing and murder. This is what they're doing now. That's all they know. And they're on their journey to death.
Right.
You take care, brothers. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for your contribution.
Thank you for the wisdom.
Let's go to New Mexico. New Mexico. Are you there? Let's put them back on hold. We must have stepped away. Let's go to New York City. New York.
Yes, good evening to you and your guests. I'd just like to ask Dr. Horn.
He says that
we need to get out of here. I'd just like to know, and I have another question after this, where are we going?
That's part of the planning. That's part of the what we have to lay out. Where are we going? We have not yet done that.
You know, Dr. Horn, I have much appreciation and respect for elders like yourself. But, you know, as someone who has come under the guidance of the Dr. Clarks and the Dr. Ben, been around them all.
Okay.
I'm just sorry to say, at this stage of the game, as a 61-year-old who have been in this for over 40 years, you know, I don't think that we have gotten ourselves to the point as a people, collectively, on really honestly moving forward, because unfortunately, as I refer to this Negro P, they're just caught up in too much of whiteness. And unfortunately, those of us who have an African consciousness haven't been able to come together collectively and figured out how we could work with one another to move forward and let that Negro P love this white master. Because the reality is, you know, it's sad to say, this thing is crumbling and we are going to get caught up in the quagmire of this crumbleization because of our so-called desire to chase whiteness. And my second question has to do with this first question. It seems as though we don't understand, because I listen to a lot of these Negro pigs, and it just makes me crack up, to be honest with you, talking about this whole America and Iran and manipulation of Israel fight that's going on right now. And the realization is, as black people in America, we not benefiting from this shit. I mean, they basically, if the truth be told and the analysis was honest, America is really getting their ass kicked. You know yeah. what I mean? All for Israel, all for Israel that don't give a damn about Americans. They just want your money. And unfortunately, because black people really don't have a geopolitical understanding of the world in this stage, we're being caught up in this situation, and we're going to, in the end, suffer the most. Because every facet of this society, in all honesty, is changing. And unfortunately, we black people collectively are in no position to survive it. We have no base. We have nothing in place, honestly, to survive it. And the disappointing thing is, the people of our consciousness, if the truth be told, don't have nothing in place either. And that's the tragedy in all of this. So that was why I asked you the question, where we going? Because this is about to get more severe, honestly, economically for black people than we even imagined.
Now, you're right. Well, I agree with that.
I respect elders like you. I think that, unfortunately, and I always say this about Dr. Ben and Dr. Carr, with all of their teachers, I think one of their biggest mistakes was they didn't put us in a position to have leadership that could take their teachings and guide us into the place that we need to be because of this sickness of wanting to be part of the whiteness. And white people hate us. And it's like, I'll leave you with this. The most profound statement that brought me into consciousness, and it's sad to say that the person that wrote it and said it no longer believe it. The white man is your perpetual enemy. And that was by Hakeem Adabudi. That statement right there guided my whole life. So, hey, man, if you don't understand the white man's your perpetual enemy, then you basically playing games with yourself. And what makes the mistake is that people take that out of context. The context that they miss is, yes, the white man is your perpetual enemy. Is every white person your perpetual enemy? No, but every white person has the potential and the characteristics to be your perpetual enemy. So I don't know, man. I'm at that age now where I'm just trying to enjoy my last days on this planet. But, you know, I cry daily over the plight of our people and the misguidedness. So all I can do now is tell the young people that I'm trying to mentor and guide, get the hell out of here, man. Don't stay in America. Go some effing place else and find the life for you and yourself. And the thing is, you could go anywhere in this world as long as you have certain basics. And, you know, unfortunately, we're not got our kids that have those certain basics. You know what I mean? So we'll see what happens, brother. But thank you again, Elder, for trying to guide us in the ways of learning that was given to us, brother. Fortunately, we don't take it into a heedness.
And thank you for your comments. Thank you for your contribution. Just before you leave, the it was said on the program, and please remember this: Black people are the timepiece for the rest of the world.
Yes.
As we move forth, we either are going to show the way to salvation of the world, or it's doomed.
Yes.
And the other thing is that you are correct. We have not yet gotten where we are going. A lot of the teaching and the training that Dr. Clark, Malcolm, Martin Luther King, a whole long line of leaders, of men and women who've been teaching us and training us, we have not yet gotten where they have taught us to go, but we are not where we were. We have moved forward. We are going to get to the higher ground. We are going to get to where we can save what can be saved. But we can't stop. We cannot rest. We cannot just say, "Hey, okay, it's all over but the shouting, I got to give up. You know, y'all people are too crazy." Mm-hmm. We cannot do that. We got to keep trying to teach, keep trying to grab the brains of whatever young folk we can to get them on the right pathway before we get out of here. Our job is to prepare until we have to hit the door, because we are not yet where we are going. We are the timepiece. I agree. We are the timepiece for the world.
Thanks again for your contribution, New York. Go ahead, Richard. Go ahead.
No, I want to agree with you, Dr. Horn. I mean, it's like really, really critical, right? That this consciousness of victory, that we must live with it until we leave.
That's right.
Whenever we come into our consciousness, but that, you know, I don't want to be sermonizing, but as you were responding, to the questions, and I was looking over something, because the long history of, you know, and I think it's really critical to reemphasize the point that you started out with, that we need an architecture, we need a strategy, and we need think tanks,
right?
And these things don't have to be something that is publicized or that gets national recognition. It just needs to, just like we're doing, we need to have critical conversations that allows us to do those things. The critical conversations to allows us to think about, you know, 50 years, 100 years from now, even though we're living right now, critical conversation that said the answers the question, well, if we have to leave in mass, where do we go? And how do we go? And what do we take? And what do we need? We have to raise those things now while we're living in the now. But that's we right. could do that. We could do that. And what is the structure? Because for me, we do have a structure. You know, I mean, and when you give the model of the UNIA, that was the structure. And when, you know, people, you know, raised the question, you know, about the division, the structure was those people who already had the social consciousness. And I just want to, you know, because that's critical. But what is also critical, which a couple of callers gave, you gave, that we have, I mean, I know it's, you know, people always want to talking about when they're strategizing, they want to use the SWOT analysis, you know, your strength, your weakness, your opportunities, and your threats.
Yeah.
But the two elements, and, you know, that, well, one that is not there is your opposition, whether you call them your perpetual enemy or not, that they, every generation, are updating their control for the purpose that you said. We didn't come here voluntarily.
That's right.
So the systems that they got in place is not for us to be able to act like we are in control. Right? So you got to factor in why we may not look like we're moving. It's because we have a structure opposition. And we gave somebody gave an example, even on the continent and here. And we have a continuous threat. So, I apologize. I just wanted to, because as we're talking about this, to reemphasize that Mr. Garvey, the UNIA, is a part of a long historical lineage.
That's right.
We got Richard Allen, got AME. I wanted to read the thing from Charles Gardner. He said, you know, that's 1807. He's saying we need to self-organize. We need to regulate our affairs, temporal and spiritual. This is 1807.
Right.
1855, Reverend Charles Gardner said we need to be able to organize, you know, we need to go to war. This is 1850, right? 1873, the Exodus.
We've had the messengers. They keep coming.
Right. And we did those things at that time. So the opposition, who has a structure where they can be able to perpetuate, to control us, they come back. But we have to continue to create new strategies, new types of market structures. We can't say that was bad. They successfully did in their time what they were supposed to do. But the opposition is doing what it's supposed to do, right? I mean, 1920, the UNIA. 1930, you know, the Black Belt thesis, Nation of Islam, you know, 1964, the National Afro-American, you know, Student Conference, 1968, the Republic of New Africa, 1972, the Gary Convention, we have not stopped.
We have not stopped building. You're right.
You know, and I think, you know, sometimes I think that, you know, and it's important for us to, as you're, you know, what you're raising in for us to look at Pan-Africanism, that global, because each one of those, some was saying, we need to get out of here because these guys ain't going to change. Does that mean everybody? But again, from a strategic thinking perspective, you can think about the future and you don't have to move nowhere. But that don't, and as long as they don't control your consciousness, it's when they control your consciousness to where we think we've lost.
Yep. Yep.
Even if we move,
we can't submit.
You know, so I just wanted to, you know, bring that forward because I think that what you're saying, and we have to regulate that within the context, that this is, yes, a moral imperative. But we have to get power is the difference between influence, trying to convince somebody not to harm you, and having power. Somebody not, you know, they're knowing, you know, you kill my dog, I kill your cat.
That's right. That's right. Them knowing that there will be
repercussions.
One blow, you give the blow, I give, hey, you get money back.
Yep.
I mean, for every sin that you impose on me, you know you're gonna get one back, you and your family. So yeah, we have got to get back to that power. Mm-hmm. We had it, and we got to return to it. We cannot go with them. If we are the timepiece for the world, we have got to get on about our damn business.
Yep.
Go ahead.
I want to say something in reference to the conversation tonight, period, because communication and accurate information is important. That's why you see when these folks go into these countries with aggression, one of the first things they do is knock out communication.
That's right.
They knock it out. But see, being that we are here with our former enslavers, They can't knock out communication among blacks. So what do? They do the next best thing. They co-opt the communication among black people.
They've been good at that.
Yes. It's no way that I'm in Philadelphia. It's no way that I can depend on the Carl Nelson show to bring on guests and give out accurate information and subject matter to the people to discuss. It should be a lot of Carl Nelsons all around the country.
That's right.
That's one of the reasons why me and this brother here is doing this program.
Right.
That's one of the reasons. Here, I'm in Philadelphia, the fifth largest city in this country. And we have a black-owned station here. And it's one, maybe two hosts on there that's worth their salt. All the other ones, come on, man, you got to be kidding me. And I'm not saying that to be no hater.
No, I understand.
Now, this is the reason I'm saying this, because it's a lot of things happening that's going to really cause our people to move. And some of our people are going to get caught off guard because the communication is not there. And I'm talking about the communication from people that know what's going on or involved in what's going on. I'll give an example of what I'm saying. And I'm going to play this, and I want to thank Brother Maurice Carver from up there in New York City with the Black Men Screaming TV program that sent me, because he monitors a lot of these sessions. It's two things that's coming up soon. That Caelius versus Robinson, I think the decision is supposed to come down from the Supreme Court in June, I think. That if they strike that down, that'll knock out that Voting Rights Act for black folks and cause the tens of maybe half of that black caucus to lose their seats. It'll basically gut the Voting Rights Act. But these things is not really being talked about. Now, here's another thing that's not being talked about. And I'm going to play this. I want the listening audience to listen to the conversation. Really listen. Put on your critical thinking hats like Professor Horn is saying tonight. Listen to what's being stated here. I'm going to play this session that come out of the Supreme Court less than a week ago. No, it may have been a little over a week. Because they're discussing birthright citizenship. Now, the first guy that asked a question hasn't asked a question in the Supreme Court in years. In fact, before that guy Scalia died, he hadn't asked a question in 11 years. But this time he asked the first question. Listen to the question now. And the reason I focus in on him and Ketanji Jackson, because they're the only two blacks in that court. Listen to the question that both him and Jackson asked, and listen clearly to the response. Put on your thinking caps. Play this for your families. Get them to talk about it. I'm going to play it, and I'm going to come back to you, Dr. Horn, and Richard, to get you guys' response. This is mainly for the listeners. Listen to this exchange. Wait a minute. Boy. Hold it here. Hold it. I know I got it. Oh, this is it. Hold it.
I welcome the court's questions.
General Sauer, before we get into the broader national issues, would you start with Dred Scott? Dred Scott was a case about state citizenship. It was a diversity case. We know what Chief Justice Taney did with that.
Now, wait a minute. Before I continue that, I want you to listen really closely to the answer that he got in reference to the question he asked. But look at this guy. I mean, you know, he's a perfect example of what you're talking about, Dr. Horn. This guy, wait a minute. This is the first diversity case. You're talking about Dred Scott. That's one of our elders. He went to that court and took that case to court because he had escaped and supposedly been a free man, went back to get his wife, and these devils tried to put him back in as slave. So the way he characterizes and the way he frames this question, I mean, this guy's a total disgrace as a black man. He's a total disgrace. I hate to say I hate a man's guts, but he's getting close to it. I mean, I always want to put the you know, our people can change, but some of these people, they're gone. I just hated the way this guy framed that thing about our elder. But listen,
and
to
he wasn't, and he was raised with black folks, strong black man.
Well, listen to the. I'm gonna play it again. Listen to the question, but really pay attention to the answer. That's what I want black folks here to really grasp.
Before we get into the broader national issues, would you start with Dred Scott? Dred Scott was a case about state citizenship. It was a diversity case. We know what Chief Justice Taney did with that. How does the Citizenship Clause respond specifically to Dred Scott and answers or changes or corrects its answer as to citizenship? Are we to have two different definitions for those and what state citizenship is based on?
Now, wait a minute. I'm sorry, I had to cut in again. Before I play his answer, keep in mind that citizenship on the 14th Amendment is talking about you people. When I say you, I'm talking about us. It's talking about black people here in this country.
That's right.
The 14th, 13th, 14th, 15th Amendment was clearly what we consider black amendments. The 14th Amendment is talking about you. Now, listen to this answer.
Thank you, Justice Thomas. I'll maybe start by addressing Dred Scott. You know, as you alluded to the fact, Dred Scott, you know, imposed one of the worst injustices in the history of this court, and it led to the outbreak of the Civil War. It's very clear, and this court, in all of its early cases interpreting the 14th Amendment, said, you know, the one pervading purpose, the main object of the Citizenship Clause is to overrule Dred Scott and establish the citizenship of the freed slaves. And if you look at the debates in the congressional record and discussion surrounding the adoption of the Citizenship Clause, what you see is a very clear understanding that the newly freed slaves and their children have a relationship of domicile. They do not have a relationship to any foreign power. For example, there's a comment where he says, look, people have been here for five generations and clearly have no relationships to any foreign African potentate, or have a relationship of allegiance to the United States. And that reinforces our point that allegiance is what the word jurisdiction means. It doesn't mean regulatory jurisdiction or sort of being subject, merely subject to the laws. They're talking and they're thinking about it in those debates about allegiance.
Now wait a minute. Wait a minute. You don't really, you ain't got nowhere to go, black people. We brought you over here. We destroyed your culture. You don't have, you got a domicile relationship here. You don't have any relationship to any African. What did he say? What term did he use?
Potentate.
African potentate. So you just have a domicile relationship here.
Right.
No. Wait a minute. Black folks running around saying that they're citizens just like white folks. I've been telling, I don't know anything. I'm no constitutional attorney. I'm telling you that they set the parameters of your quote-unquote citizenship. You're not equal citizens with white people.
Right.
You have a domicile relationship.
You're a special kind of
jurisdiction. Domicile is the jurisdiction, but the allegiance. Now, for me,
go ahead.
I got a long thing on that one, because when I heard that, the thing was allegiance, because they never asked black folks, you know, there was no plebiscite to ask us. I don't know if you would agree, Dr.
The time they asked us, we said, hell no, we want to leave.
Yeah, right. Yes.
Right. And that was from the 18th, definitely when they asked. Yeah. Right. And you know, even with the colonization, you know, those people who left, they were saying, and before that, when the Revolutionary War, those who went to Canada, they were saying, right. I'm out of here.
Right.
But at that point, when the country was being restructured around those amendments, they could have asked, we didn't even get a chance. And it wasn't like we didn't have conventions that where it could have been put on the floor and then it would have been a clear cut thing. It was just automatically, We know you belong. You have allegiance to us because you ain't got no place else to go.
Oh my goodness!
What? We have made sure you have no place else.
Exactly.
Which is domicile. Which is that means you're under our jurisdiction. Mm-mm-mm. That's the way I'm interpreting it.
Forever and always.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. I wanted your thoughts because that answer to him, when he gave that vague description of Dred Scott, that answer by that white man, he was talking about Scott as a freed slave or a slave. And the domicile. Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry, Doug.
Whether we call you a slave or not, you're still a slave.
Wow.
You know, we may remove the name, but you are still a slave. Where else you got to go? Mm. We own you. Mm. You are our boy. You ain't going nowhere.
And that other thing of him imposing the question, throwing in there this modern concept of diversity.
Yeah, come on.
I mean, what? But of course, the issue was, as you stated, it was: are you a national citizen, which means that you can be able to go through any state, or a state citizen, that means you only a citizen of that state,
of Virginia,
right? Yeah. So that's how the question should be framed in relationship to Dred Scott, not about some diversity, but now it's in. Now that has Supreme Court, so from this point on, it's going to be look like it's a job thing. Did they bring in enough? And you were a part of the quota of folks that would be in there to make this place diverse. Diverse compared to at that moment, it was, were you a citizen, and what kind of citizen were you? And Taney said, you're not even a citizen. You weren't even considered national or state.
That's right. You were property then, you're property now.
Now, let me play Ketanji Brown Jackson, Ketanji Jackson, her question. And it kind of follows up on what Scott raised because they're talking about domicile. Again, she gives vague when she's talking about domicile. They're talking about blacks. These two blacks sitting up in there, they're afraid to mention black. But let me listen to her question and check out the answer.
General, can I ask you a question? To follow up on what Justice Gorsuch was exploring with you with respect to domicile, did I understand you to say that domicile is going to be eventually or is controlled by Congress? Who is domiciled? I'm struggling to figure out who is domiciled in your argument.
The domiciliaries are people who are lawfully present and have an intent to remain permanently. So that's a kind of black letter, understanding of domicile. Now, Congress can dictate that certain classes of people, legal entrants and so forth, cannot lawfully, lack the legal capacity to form a legally binding domicile.
But if that's so, then doesn't it make the domicile for the purpose of the 14th Amendment turned then ultimately on Congress's will in a way that the framers did not intend? I mean, my understanding was the framers put this citizenship clause into the Constitution to prevent future Congresses from being able to affect citizenship in this way.
Sure. Very briefly, no, I don't think so, because it is up to the alien whether or not they want to be domiciled here. Now, there may be collateral
consequences. But I thought you just said Congress can make determinations as to who counts as being domiciled here.
Yeah,
so if that's true, then it ultimately would impact, in your theory, whether or not this person can claim that they have citizenship for 14th Amendment purposes based on Congress's determination. And I just thought that's what the 14th Amendment was trying to get away from.
Yes. Very briefly, I just point you to the discussion in Professor Warman's amicus brief where he talks about this is not a new problem. Going back even to the British common law, there's a situation of people who lack a safe conduct and are passing through the king's domains without permission. And he says the best reading of the common law is they are not under the protection of the king and they're not covered by the rule of birthright citizenship.
Hey, listen. The white man was right when he said, well, this is not a new problem. He's exactly right. George Washington dealt with that problem when blacks was joining the British Army. Thomas Jefferson come along and he said, listen, these free blacks that's walking around society, we got to get them out of here. If they're on the plantation, yep. No, they are all right. We got them working. But the other ones, we got to get out of here. So he came up with that idea about sending them to Liberia. Later on, Lincoln talked up. He met with our ancestors in Washington, D.C., and talked about sending them to Panama.
That's right.
He's exactly right. This is not a new problem.
Not a whole lot of people know that.
He's exactly right. They're talking about you, black people. The ones running around talking about, oh, I'm a citizen. I got rights just like you. They're talking about you. If this pendulum swings in one direction or another, you, what you thought you were might not be what they consider that you are.
That's right.
I just wanted to throw that out there. Just for
You may be going to Ghana a little quicker than you thought.
Well, listen, Well,
he said he may be going somewhere.
Oh, my goodness. Dr. Horn, this is the fastest 3 hours in radio. We got to get you back on here with us and talk about some more. Listen, because this is a ever-changing situation that we're in. So yeah. we need you men's opinions. Men that have been in the struggle, and then
I'll come back.
Good.
I'm doing nothing but studying, writing, and organizing. Hey,
Richard, I'm gonna pass it to you before we let Dr. Horn go.
Well, I just want one always, you know, thank you and congratulate people like yourself who are, you know, doing that, the work, the study, and the organizing. And as Elliot said, as we're, you know, because it just came across to us, you know, about the 2001 World Conference Against Racism in Durham. So yeah. The basis of, you know, the December 12th and the basis of NCOBRA and the whole thing about reparations, where we started earlier in the conversation, the question about self-repair from, you know, I would like to emphasize that. So I think it's important for us to, you know, to utilize this platform discussion with people like yourself of raising the question of what type of architecture, what is the strategy, you know, and how do we in our informal manner operate like a think tank that we have to formulate in a formal manner.
That's right.
So I definitely would like to, you know, continue to be in dialogue with you. And I appreciate, you know, the work you've done in this moment that we've had.
Listen, before we go, Richard, let's spend a couple moments. Let me take another call for you, Dr. Horn. Let's go to Newport News. Okay. Newport News.
Hey, how you doing, gentlemen? Big ups to you, but I want to tell Dr. Horn, I wanted to make sure that he knows this conversation was had on the 165th birthday of the start of the Civil War. In Sumter, South Carolina. I thought you'd find that interesting. I'm 72 years old. Keep putting in that work, my man.
Hey, Asante Sana, my brother, and I'll keep doing that.
You know what?
I'm actually in Virginia, Yorktown, Virginia, the home of the revolution, the Colonial Parkway to Jamestown. So I grew up with this stuff. Interesting conversation, but like I said, this is the 165th, so I thought you might put that in your notes for your appearance here on Time for Awakening. Appreciate the conversation, sir.
I appreciate you, brother.
You know, before we go, I want to play something, Dr. Horn, and get your thoughts on this, because when he said it, he kind of shocked me. Although, listen, whatever people are doing out here, even if I don't consider it conscious, I always try to keep the light on for people to maybe they'll come around. But he said something over the weekend, and I'm going to play it for our listeners. Reverend Al Sharpton said something that really shocked me, because I know the funders for that NAM convention, and I know a lot of the black elected officials and leadership that he had there don't agree with what he states here. But I want to play this for you and the listeners if they hadn't heard it. Let me play this just to get your thoughts going out. Where is it at? It's right here. This is it.
But they're going to celebrate the 250th anniversary of the country July 4th. But that's not our celebration. We were slaves then. And they celebrate signing the Declaration of Independence 1776. We were not even emancipated until 1863. So I don't know what everybody getting ready for a celebration. You know, that it seems crazy for me to have on the birthday hat at your birthday party. That ain't my party. In fact, I'm thinking Saturday when I do my address to the convention of calling for something on July 4th, like Frederick Douglass did. Why should we be celebrating that? We may need to do our own rally in Philly or somewhere that day, because that's not our background.
Now, listen, he's right. A broken clock is right twice a day. He's absolutely right. But give me your thoughts going out, Dr. Horn.
Yeah, he did have a point. But a couple of things. Number one, slavery in the United States did not start at the very beginning. You know, even though the 1619 Project said that, you know, the first slaves were here in Virginia in 1619, blah, 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 that's not true. They were indentured servants. Slavery as a system, condition, was not made official until the 1650s. And the other thing is that there were black folk who fought with the rebels here against England. There were black folk, even though they didn't teach it in school, mm-hmm. there were black folk who were out there being rebels against England. They were shooting and fighting for the freedom that they thought would be part of. The other thing is that when he said, we were not free until, you know, after the
Emancipation
Proclamation. That's not all. Black people have never been slaves here. They've never been official slaves here. There were black populations in Boston. Hell, without the black population of Boston, white people would have died quickly. We gave them the smallpox vaccination in mm-hmm. Boston. You know, black people were in different parts of this country and legally were not slaves. All black people have not always been slaves in this country. And we need to be clear about that. And so some people tasted the freedom that was available. We and white people did. We just didn't expand enough. They didn't build. They didn't get enough of kind of black folk to make us understand slavery was not the only way. And again, even doing slavery, that situation, if your mother was not a slave, then you're not either. They had different variations of the system to confuse people. What we are saying is that Reverend Al was just being Reverend Al, and he threw some doo doo in the punch, and people just have to deal with it. Freedom has never been a straightforward, straight line for black people in this country. We've mm-hmm. always been dealing with white people's foolishness, and we still are. We have got to take that out of their hands. Our freedom should be our determination. And we got to teach each other how to get there. That's a road that we need to pave and move on until we get to where we're supposed to go. That's what Garvey, that's what they all said. Pan-Africanism means you are African people at the beginning, you're African people then, you African people now, you got to get back to your Africanness. And they can't stop you. They can't stop you. Who you are is not dependent upon what they say you are.
Dr. Horn, I want to thank you for being with us tonight and looking forward to your next visit.
Hey, and I will be coming back, my brother. And I thank you for the invitation and thank you for the camaraderie. I love chopping it up with black people about moving forward.
Talk to you soon. Thank you, sir.
Okay.
Richard, come to the end of another program, man. Let me get the lineup on top of the Awakening Media, Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., African Perspectives with Brother Oshi. Always interesting topics, dialogue, and guests on African Perspectives. That's Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Later on Monday evenings, Our Story with Bobby West Johnson and Brother Johnny, straight from New Orleans, Louisiana. That's 7 to 9 on Monday evenings, and they double back Wednesday at the same time, 7 to 9 p.m. On Thursday, the door is always open for the Black Liberation Movement. Brother Patrick Lumumba, Sister Crystal Denise, Brother Rodney Lowe, Brother Malik Hayes, four hosts, one mission. The Black Liberation Movement in Mississippi, Mississippi on the Move. That's 8 to 10 on Thursday. Sunday, Pinckney to Pinckney from 5 to 6, time for an awakening from 6 until. I want to thank everybody for listening to the program this evening. Lively discussion as always, and we'll be back next week, Lord willing, to continue on this path towards an awakening. Peace.
If you're driving through the country on a lazy afternoon, or you're watching your children playing after school, they seem to be so unaware. Oh, I know the things that they'll soon have to take care of. We've got to do something, yeah, to save the children. Such a small part of the things that they'll soon be right at the heart of. My little Tommy, he said he wants to be a fireman. living. Soon it will be their turn to try and save the world. We've got to do something, yeah, to save the children. To save the children. To save the children.